Welcome to the Strong Life Coach Podcast. We speak life, coach life, write life, and lead life. And today we have a special guest with us, one of my closest friends on the planet, Chris Flores. And he's in to talk about sales and his experience from that space. I know some of us can have a little bit of a sour taste in our mouth about salespeople. We don't like people to sell to us. We associate, we even have almost this stigma about used car salesmen that we associate, but this is one of the guys who's been incredibly successful in the arena, and we want to get a chance to figure to learn from him and to see what principles we could take from his journey as in sales, and also even his transition from his sales role into a leadership role in a Fortune 100 company. But Chris, glad to have you on the show. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Loved that intro into Strong Life Coach and what it's all about. Definitely can share some experiences with you today. Yeah.
All right. Exciting. No. Now, I did hear in one of the top insurance industries, or rather the insurance companies in the insurance industry, that you were the not just like top 100 agents, but you were not even just top 50, not even just top 10, but for 2 years straight, you were the lead insurance sales agent in one of the top tier name brand insurance companies, and we would just really want to know. I want to know what you did to excel and have the success that you had in that arena.
Yeah. In the insurance world, that 2 years in a row was regarding direct written premium, and you know, it was all just inbound phone calls. But it really relates to, I would say, four principles to success. You know, there was endurance on the call, there was urgency on the calls, there was follow-up, and there was confidence.
And now, when you say direct written premium, for people who don't know what that means, what were you actually selling on these phone calls?
Yeah, so these phone calls included property and casualty, you know, boring stuff. But property and casualty, life insurance, your motorcycles, RVs, you know, auto, home, you know, renters, all that good stuff.
So pretty much almost any insurance that somebody would need for the house that they own, or if they were in an apartment, or if they had a car. So
vital things that you need in life. I mean, someone that has these large items, I mean, a property, vehicle, I mean, if you don't have it insured, shame on you. Okay. Vital to success.
I already hear that passion you have for it. Shame on you is coming out over
shame
here.
Shame on you.
Okay, yeah. So let's break down the top four. You said there's top four reasons that you contributed to your success.
Let's break them
in
down.
That arena. So let's break it down. So you said the first one.
Let's go with urgency.
Urgency.
Yeah. Yeah. So just urgency, every single phone call that you're on, you need to be trying to close the sale. And that's not to say that you're trying to be a car salesman. That's not trying to say that you're trying to help out that stigma of not enjoying these phone conversations. But the role that I had is that people are calling you. So first off, they're not caught off guard by the conversation. They're calling you because they want your product. They simply want to be sold on it. But the urgency is just get it done on that call, then and there. Don't play around. Don't waste time. You know, really don't wait for the next day or, you know, a week from now. I mean, if there's, you got to listen to cues in the phone call. You got to listen to what's going on in their life and their needs. And, you know, sometimes people don't know what's best for them. And to say that they need to wait when there might be benefit to just get it done right then and there. So it's your job to create the sense of urgency of, you know what, let's just get this done. You know, I don't want you to have to, you know, call five different companies and go in a circle and, you know, be told all kinds of confusing things. I mean, hopefully I can be knowledgeable enough to get the job done for you right now. And kind of gaining that commitment at the beginning of the call, like, hey, if I can do this for you and make this and this happen for you, would that be sufficient? Would that help you with your need? And would that solve your need? If the answer is yes, then by the end of the phone call, you circle back to that, planting that seed at the beginning, and you're able to say, well, let's go ahead and get it done like we talked about at the beginning, because I'm able to solve the need.
Mm-hmm. When I hear you speak about urgency, it hits me. And as you know, I'm in the infancy of building in my own business. Mm-hmm. And as I hear you speaking about the urgency you have with fulfilling a need, it hits home for me, because I'm thinking about what my business does to fulfill needs. And I'm asking myself in that sales role, and it is a fascinating new space for me to be in. You know, I've been in insurance as well was in insurance for 7 years, but I was in a customer service leadership role. And so it wasn't really sales oriented, but I'm in this new phase of life where there's sales. And I like how you captured, you find there's needs out there that people have. And then you're doing your part to convey the urgency, the reason why people should be urgent in having these covered. And I'm asking myself, do I fundamentally understand the reasons and the benefits of my speaking or my coaching or my consulting and seeing the fruit and benefit and value that it could add to businesses, that could add to individuals? And it challenges me to ensure that I have the same urgency that you just described, really in the service to the person or to the business. Not that it's like it's about, you know, I need to be urgent for my own pocketbook or my own checkbook, but because if I have an urgency, I could help benefit the people around me.
Right. And to add to that, when somebody, you know, talks to you about your service, they may not understand the full spectrum of what your service provides. So it's really your job to enlighten them on something that may be a better fit than what they initially call you for. And that's not trying to bait and switch somebody, is the crazy term for it, right? To sell them something that they don't need or want. But no, it's assessing their needs and determining, you know what? You're calling about this product, but this product is actually going to help you even more, or addition to what you called for. So discovering, you know, just where their head's at, who they are, what their assets are, what's going to help them most. I mean, you know, someone calls in for an auto policy, but then you realize they have a home. They have a $300,000 home. They have a family. They have children. They, you know, to maybe talking to them about life insurance. And I mean, you need to expand on their big picture and be a one-stop shop. So why would you want to just stop at being a specialist on one item when you're a one-stop shop? You can take care of everything. So taking that time to break it down and assess somebody's needs is vital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you brought up that you didn't use the phrase, but the phrase of cross-selling or upselling. Yeah, if somebody's calling in with one need and you understand that they have another avenue that you can share with them about, and how much do you share about even your personal experiences or the personal experiences of other people who have needed policies in times of need and where that really came through for them?
Yeah, no, definitely. You always need to paint the picture. You always need to give them something to reference, whether it's an example of a prior customer, whether it's kind of putting themselves in that picture and talking about their own situation and kind of, you know, creating a story for them so they can, you know, kind of put themselves there. All those things can be helpful. But to me, simplicity is always key. Don't, you know, overburden the situation. Don't overexplain the situation you're making it too complicated. You know, just you really got to understand your audience and, you know, make sure that that you're speaking their language. Mm-hmm. First off, right? When it comes to stories, I mean, you definitely, it's helpful to be genuine, but definitely play on people's heartstrings. I mean, in the insurance world, for example, true stories, you know, it's like this couple, they're getting onto the older side where they're retiring. They just bought a brand new RV and mm-hmm. they maybe get an RV policy mm-hmm. with the insurance company, right? But then maybe they get bare minimum coverage because they're trying to save every penny they can. They want to go across the country and they want to explore the United States, right? They're retired. Mm-hmm. They want to explore and have an adventure for the first time in their lives almost, right? So that's exciting, but if you're not talking to the right insurance person to be properly, adequately covered, you can lose all the assets that you worked all your life for. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the story is that this old couple weren't skilled in driving an RV. They just bought it. So they ended up, having a car in their blind spot. Long story short, get into an accident and the other person passes away that they hit mm-hmm. and their family sues them. They lose all their assets because they didn't have proper coverage mm-hmm. regarding liability, personal mm-hmm. liability for someone that they hit. So their home is, you know, on the table as far as assets, mm-hmm. You name it, you know? So they basically had to liquidate everything just to pay off this lawsuit that they lost because they made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So it's real. It's real. So painting the picture is important. And I mean, if somebody has a nice home, I mean, genuinely, just a homeowner in general, you need to at least have, you know, 100, 300 coverage for liability if you are, driving a vehicle of some type.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's way too much information.
No, I feel where you're coming from, especially in the urgency, what it made me ask myself is, am I maximizing the time? Even you describe your role was that inbound call, that inbound calls coming in, and you want to maximize your time. Don't play around. Focus on what you're doing, on the service you're providing to the people. And when I think about that is the principles I'm hearing you share, I'm asking myself, am I maximizing my time? Am I focused in my business? And I'm just using that to really just try to help me with that principle. And even as people listen to us, I'm hoping that they're getting that principle too. If some people aren't in sales, but I think the principle of urgency is a valid one as far as maximizing the time that we have with the people that are around us.
True.
To really help meet needs.
Yeah, and just, I mean, you should take the first few minutes of the call should be discovering those needs, maybe pulling a report and really deciphering if you can help this person or not. Because truth be told, every customer is not going to be able to be helped in any business that you're running. Mm-hmm. So why waste somebody else's time and your own time unless you're just really trying to, you can learn the ropes and maybe you're in training or perhaps, right? But we need to quickly decipher if we can help somebody or not, because time is valuable and mm-hmm. we need to move on to people that we can help.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, how did you establish boundaries? One detail I recall you sharing with me along the way is you shared you were particular about not trying to sell policies to people in your personal life or coworkers necessarily. And you managed to become top salesman of the organization without even leveraging some of those relationships. What helped you to establish those boundaries? Because I think of urgency as I'm maximizing everything I have. But then I think you did another part of your rise is that you had boundaries about who you wouldn't try to sell to.
Yeah, yeah. I think that it's taboo to try to sell things to your family. I think of, you know, those pyramid scheme companies, and you know, it's not like I'm selling Mary Kay or, you know, you name it, right?
It's, wow, okay. Yeah, you're putting it out there like that.
Right? Like, I mean, you know, these are people calling to me. I mean, the funny term that you might call it is like, it's like shooting fish in a barrel, you know, like a job where you get inbound phone calls where you don't really have to make any outbound calls. Mm. All the customers call you because they want the policy, they want the products. Like, that's cake.
Right,
that's
right.
Cake. So, I mean, why would I need to reach out to my family and friends and beg for policies? And I mean, you know, I've had the Girl Scouts and all these people come to my front door and, you know, beg for, you know, to sell their products to me. And how do you say no to a little kid, right?
Thin Mints,
you can't,
you know?
Yeah, I've had a little kid come to me selling pieces of paper that had crayon scratches on it that they said were bookmarks. And guess what? I had to buy like 50 of them. You know, kind of a sucker, right? In that sense, because you know what? Kids are heartstrings and we want to help them out, especially when they got stories about all the exciting things that they get from winning contests and stuff at school. And you want to contribute. You want to be a part of that, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why companies that have that branding where they're selling something beyond the product, but something like, not to get into specifics, but when a company has a belief and you believe in that belief as well, the product, there's an added benefit to buying that product. You know, you're supporting them. So that's also key to a successful company too, right?
Absolutely. And there's a principle you brought about. I do want to come back to, but I want to make sure we're able to flesh out a few of these points. So you had the first one is urgency. You know, this is maximizing the time, focusing on fulfilling the needs that people have before you. Of course, your environment, it was easier to assess the needs because people are calling with a vested interest even to start. Now, the second one, what would you say is the second big?
Let's talk about that confidence and knowledge of the product itself. Mm-hmm. So I would say that next. First and foremost, if your customer senses that you don't understand the product, that you're not familiar with the product, that you're not passionate about the success and how that product will align with them, why would they want to buy it? Mm-hmm. You know, so they want to feel like you're a specialist. They want to feel like you have a firm understanding of what you're selling and how it's going to play into them feeding off that that service. So if you can't explain that, then there's no point in them to buy it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when I think about confidence, I shared this story with you previously. And when my wife and I, Lita and I, were at a Mexican restaurant, and we were, you know, having a meal, and somebody walked up to us to offer us to sell us some cologne. And they pulled out the bottle, you know, let me sample it a little bit, and it smelled good. You know, it was, I think it was the Abercrombie kind, Fierce, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. And it has this nice scent to it. So it was like 50% off. I bought the cologne, took it home, you know, next day I spray it. But about 20 minutes later, the cologne, it wore off. It wasn't like the legitimate cologne. So I paid half for it, but ultimately it wasn't worth anything. Now, that was, I think, an illustration of a product that they might have believed in, but ultimately it gave me the buyer's remorse that sometimes you could talk about. But it, how would you compare that to maybe when people oversell a product? Have you ever seen done, or have you ever been on the other side of it where people, where the product isn't as great as it seemed?
Yeah, and I think that savvy buyers can smell that a mile away. In your situation, I mean, you were completely lied to. You know, you were buying a product that was labeled as Abercrombie Fierce, yet you got a product that was the Abercrombie bottle with, you know, for lack of a better word, some toilet water inside. So I don't know what they put in there for you, but it obviously wasn't Abercrombie, right?
Right.
And I used to work there. And man, I probably shouldn't even say that. That's embarrassing. But yeah, just, you know, at the same time, I definitely don't shop there anymore. But you were bamboozled in that sense, right?
Right?
You didn't get the product that you were looking for at all. So maybe they were spot on with their approach in selling it, because the product of Abercrombie, let's not try to, you know, talk down about their brand. I mean, they have a great brand, even if it is, you know, to maybe 10 years ago they were in, right? Does Abercrombie in? Do people buy that? Is it, there's still stores in the mall?
There is.
Okay, you can confirm that? Okay.
Yes, confirmed.
Yeah, so, you know, but yeah, that was, that salesman had the right attitude as far as selling, and that's not a horrible thing, I think, to be passionate about your product, but he was just being dishonest entirely about what his product really was.
Mm-hmm. And when I bring it back, the principle back to my business, I'm asking about the confidence I have. And it brings me back to the exercise I did when I was, I think it was 3 months ago in March, and I was in Florida. And the speaker was talking to us about sales principles. And he brought up this point that stuck with me, and it hit me in my soul. And he said, if you have a problem fundamentally with people selling to you, as an entrepreneur, you're probably going to have a hard time selling to other people.
Mm.
And he challenged us to think through what actually bothers us when it comes to selling or being sold to. Because if you can understand that at the root level, to deconstruct your view of sales, if you could understand that at the root level, yep, you might be able to modify your view on sales so that it's almost purified and that you can purify your motivation for selling. So I thought about that story is when I was sold, I was sold a poor product. I never want to be on either side, really. I don't want to be bamboozled as the buyer of a poor product, but I certainly don't want to be a seller of a poor product. And again, in my world, while I'm not selling insurance policies and I'm not selling cologne, I am selling a soft skill. I'm selling the skill of coaching, and I'm selling the skill of speaking, and I'm selling the skill of consulting and even of writing. So even this insight and principles that I've learned along the way from various leaders and influencers in the world, I can have confidence because those principles have helped transform my life. Those same principles have helped transform the people around me. So when I go to businesses or people or whoever I'm connecting with my business, this soft skill, if you will, then I can have this confidence that helps me to understand, and it's so easily feeds into urgency that you talked about earlier. My knowledge and my confidence feed into me being urgent because I understand how great this product is.
Right, and I mean, the good thing for you is that, you know, you have a quality product, which is you, and I can attest to that. So, you know, you're not going to have too much trouble there in that realm of things with your client base.
One of the things I noticed in also when I deconstructed my view of sales, how various other situations, I was completely comfortable with people selling to me. So I'll give you an example. So when I go to HEB and I want a banana, you know, I don't get annoyed with HEB for selling bananas. I know that they sell bananas. And in fact, not only am I aware of it, not only will I go to HEB for a banana, I will proactively support HEB as a sales entity over even Walmart. I just think HEB's produce is better than Walmart's produce. Not that HEB is telling me to do this, not that they're paying me to do this. I willingly offer my support to HEB as a seller. But I've never gone, how dare HEB try to sell me a banana?
I've definitely said, how dare HEB before.
How dare HEB?
Yeah, no, they made me fall in love with their cheese ball. White chocolate with berries. White chocolate with berry cheese ball. And they discontinued it. They get you hooked, and then, oh, that's over. Let's try some other cheese balls. It was tough. It was one of the toughest days of my life when I found out that was gone.
Wow, there we go.
So thank you, HEB.
Well, it challenged me because there was various settings that I saw nothing problematic with sales. Mm-hmm. And when I put it in the right context, and when ultimately you brought it back to the product, right? If I have a great product, and I believe I do, and why not do all I can to invest in the knowledge of this product to grow further in that confidence? Why not be urgent because of that confidence and let that flow right into one another?
Good stuff, man. I like it.
All right. So if you're listening and you're thinking about this principle, again, even if you're not in sales, being confident in what you do, learning everything that you can about it, being a student of the game, and making the most out of every learning opportunity, whether you're driving, you can learn, or you're reading, you can learn, or you're watching videos to learn, but maximizing your opportunity to learn and have that knowledge that contributes to the confidence.
Yeah, and to prepare, well, to add is, success is a formula. It's preparation plus opportunity equals success. And if you're not prepared, you're not going to be successful. That's what confidence is all about, being knowledgeable about what you're selling, being prepared to sell it. The opportunity is actually having the ability to have an audience and sell it. But if you're not prepared, then it doesn't matter how large your audience is. The odds of you being successful are greatly diminished. So you really need both. You need the preparation, which is knowledge and confidence, and you need the opportunity, which is people on the phone.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I love the concept. In fact, earlier today I had a consultation with one of my friends who's starting his own motivational speaking business, and we were talking about this need as a motivator. If you feel called to be a motivational speaker, then part of you does love the performance element of speaking, like all the attention on you and performing. But the greatest speakers, they not only love the performance element of speaking, but they're gifted and disciplined when it comes to the preparation. So then there's the performance and there is the preparation. And if as long as I continue to grow in both, in how I perform as a speaker and how I prepare as a thinker and a planner and as a disciplined student, then to your point, I'm going to be primed for those opportunities.
For sure.
And one of my friends, Kevin Surrett, he passed away, but one of the things he would tell me is when opportunity is knocking at the door, it's too late to prepare. So we got to almost be in this constant state of preparation so that when opportunity is there, we're already ready.
True story. You got to answer that door. Yeah. All right.
All right. Let's segue into number three, the number three area of being successful in sales. What is that?
So number three, that is the follow-up. The follow-up. So the urgency is not going to work out every time. Things happen. People don't have money. People don't have the ability. You're going to run into obstacles all the time when it comes to the urgency element. So it's your responsibility to follow up on the call and protect your conversion rate. So conversion rate is a key phrase that corporations really focus on when it comes to who a successful sales agent or sales professional is. So to protect your conversion rate, it's protecting those people that have a high probability of closing your sale and not forgetting about them. Following up, it's funny. I would definitely focus on the urgency factor, it doesn't work out, then I would let them know, hey, you know what? I'm going to call you back in 3 days to check on you to make sure that you have this and this together. But I wouldn't follow up in 3 days. Mm-hmm. I would call the next day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny, you know, you kind of, you know, the saying, for lack of a better word, you know, you play dumb, play possum, right? And, well, let's play dead, isn't it? Maybe don't play dead, but you would call him back the next day and check up on him. Say, hey, you know what? I can't remember exactly when I said I was going to follow up, but I wanted to check up on you and make sure that everything was cool. Have you talked to other companies? Just are you kind of good to go? And most people hate the process of shopping around. Mm-hmm. People don't enjoy shopping around. I mean, this is talking about insurance on the phone mm-hmm. for potentially hours at a time. Not something that everybody looks forward to, right? Mm-hmm. So in that example, people are typically, you know, excited to just get it done and close it. And if you're showing that perseverance and attitude of like, I want to help you, typically that speaks volumes. And people are, you know, more excited to go ahead and just get it done. And, you know, and that's where, you know, even if you're not the best on price, even if you don't have the best service, maybe according to some survey or some, you know, forum online, right? If you're showing them that great customer service personally, to where you're taking care of them, and you actually show that, you know, just like nurturing ability to reach out and be there for them, I mean, that could just close the sale right there by itself, regardless of what everybody's favorite thing to focus on is price. You know, service sells as well.
Mm-hmm. And there's a premium that you get from excellent service, and there's a premium you get from availability and showing that I care about you, I care about the product, and I would love to be a part of this product coming together with you. And it's interesting. As soon as you brought a follow up, I thought of my wife and I, right? And when we were getting to know each other, and a story that I'm not sure if I've told you before is we went out with a group of friends. This is before we were boyfriend and girlfriend. We went out with a group of friends. It was probably like 15 of us. And we were sitting at a long table, and we were sitting on the same side of the table, but we weren't sitting next to each other. And so we were at this barbecue place, eating barbecue in Dallas. And I had got like all you can eat ribs. Mm. So I was going to work on those ribs. So we were getting ready to leave. I didn't talk to her much during the lunch, but she came up to me and asked me if she could have a couple of my ribs. And I told her no.
I do remember this. I would have, man, if I was her, wow. I remember this story.
So I told her no. I'm not okay with you giving you some of my ribs. I plan on taking these home. Now, everybody walked outside to say bye to one another. We were driving back to San Antonio. I forgot my ribs on the table. Server came, grabbed the box, threw it away, and the ribs were gone. But I followed up. And I followed up. In fact, she was making a trip from Dallas, where she was living then, to San Antonio. And I followed up, let her know I probably should have shared my ribs, and they ended up getting thrown away. And then she circled back with me and told me, yeah, they weren't that good anyway. And we were having that conversation, and then I think it was like 2 months later, she was coming into town for to serve at this youth event, and she was coming into town, and I asked her on a couple of dates. You know, I asked her, what do you think about going on a date on a Saturday night? And she said, oh no, yeah, Saturday's probably not gonna work. She's kind of slammed, and I said, okay, what about Sunday morning? I know you don't have any plans Sunday. It's like early Sunday morning, like quick breakfast, quick coffee, something. And she, you know, shot me down for that. And then I asked her.
Rightly so. You didn't give her ribs.
And then I asked her about Sunday afternoon. And so she also shot me down. So she shot me down the first three times. But to your point about follow up, you just never know where something's going to materialize. And we continue to build a friendship and build that connection. Of course, you know, we're married.
It all
now.
Worked out. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Now,
if I was that. In that situation, like you, I would have showed up with like two boxes of ribs and be like, hey, you know, date now? Yeah? Okay. So, hey, it worked out. Beautiful couple.
It worked out. It did work out.
Great follow-up book. Is important.
Follow-up. And you're right. You're right. Even that consultation I had today, I know we were discussing closing a deal, and I plan to make that follow-up a priority.
Definitely. And quick. Don't wait on it.
Mm-hmm. Love it. All right. So we have urgency. We have confidence that comes through knowledge. We have follow up. And number four, the tip number four.
Number four, that is endurance.
Endurance. Tell me about endurance.
You know, I used to call this indifference, but you know, in talking to you in the past, I know you kind of prefer a positive spin on things, right? So right. Endurance was a smart word that I liked. So I got that from you actually. But you know, indifference, just endurance. The principle is that, you know, law of averages. Mm-hmm. You know, just the average person, when they have tough conversations on the phone, it doesn't work out. The customer's rude. The customer's pushy. The customer's tough. And, you know, salesmen are people just like anybody else. You know, mm-hmm. They're going to have ups and downs. They're going to be going moods and, you know, different things are going to impact, you know, their mindset and how they speak on the phone. And you can definitely tell when somebody is tired, you know, upset, annoyed. The customer senses all these things. But if we're able to have indifference and have that endurance, more positive word, right, then we're going to be able to have that same opportunity every call to show passion and be excited to every customer that we speak to, regardless of having a bad call or not. So it's a tough skill to learn, but a great salesman understands it, knows it, and they're going to treat every call like it's their first call of the day until the day is over. Mm-hmm. And that's going to tremendously help with sales because people don't want to buy from somebody that is showing that weakness in excitement, weakness in just being tired or just not caring about the product and not wanting to even be there. Who wants to buy from that person? Mm-hmm. Nobody.
Right.
So huge, gigantic. It's all about attitude with endurance. It's all about having a strong presence that, you know, kind of illuminates a room and that people want to be around and want to feed off of. And that's that whole charisma of being a sales leader.
Mm-hmm. This one reminds me of the song by Usher. When the song, you know, you remind me of a girl
that I once knew.
Right. Yeah. Like that. And what he's describing is he had this poor experience with a past girl, his past girlfriend.
Who hasn't?
And he had this poor experience, but just because he had a poor experience with a person from the past, mm-hmm. does not mean that the person in the present is the same way. And really, exactly. It can be unfair to project some of the weaknesses or shortcomings from somebody in the past onto somebody in the present.
Breach. Yep. I think we've all experienced that.
But I think it does. You never really know who's calling in. You don't know where they are in the buying process from a sales perspective.
True.
So being prepared to offer the best service every single time and not being dissuaded from other people's poor treatment of you it seems like such a valuable and powerful principle when it comes to life, relationships, sales. That it challenges me. It challenges me because, you know, even as all the mistakes or shortcomings, you know, you could have in life, and I don't want those to taint me or all of the not so pleasant experiences I've had. I just don't want those to define me and to own my day.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you related it to being in a relationship because you're spot on, you know, in a relationship for that person that's being judged based on the past. I mean, that's not a fair analysis of that person to prejudge them based on somebody else's treatment of you and vice versa. Just like on a phone call, I mean, it's not fair to a customer to have to be judged based on your past failure in a call before. I call it a failure, but failure because the sale didn't go through, but that customer could have just been the most unruly, you know, horrible conversationalist on the planet, you know, and mm-hmm. we got to deal with that as salespeople. Mm-hmm. Definitely our job to have that endurance once again, to persevere through it. Go to the next one, law of averages.
Yes. And even as I think about my own business and putting myself out there, I know there are a variety of premium networking groups in the city. There's the Business Network International. Mm. There's the Rotary Club. There's Toastmasters. There's the
highly recommend Toastmasters.
The Chamber of Commerce, the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. There's all these groups. But I think with that, like you said, there could be a fear, or there could be a hesitancy because of other situations not materializing into sales.
Right.
But just because those situations, those circumstances didn't materialize into it, so it does not mean that this new group will not cultivate in relationships that could potentially lead to building my business.
Yeah. Yeah. People call it being in a funk. Your writers call it writer's block. We got to be creative and, strong about, pushing through that kind of stuff.
Yes. Now, you mentioned to me, so you had this high rise of success when it came to sales, and you mentioned to me in that space that you the ambition grew within you to pursue something more, something higher, and so you had some leadership aspirations, tell me about that experience and what that was like.
That experience was probably the most important of my career. It really had to do with a mindset shift from a sales mentality to a leadership mentality. And I really didn't understand the difference at first before I had that interview. But when I was told that I didn't get the job, got that email saying, sorry, didn't work out, I had a feedback session with that hiring manager, and she sat me down, and I was very cocky and arrogant about it, thinking that I was entitled and deserved that leadership opportunity, which was taken away from me. And she opened my eyes. She said, you know what, Chris, you've done zero things leadership-wise. You've raised your hand for zero projects. You've helped zero other people. Mm-hmm. You've literally done nothing that shows a leadership competency outside of just focusing on yourself, tunnel vision focused on being a sales agent, being successful, but does that really translate to being a leader? And the answer was no. And even walking out of that meeting, I was questioning it, like, does she know what she's talking about?
Mm-hmm.
But really reflecting, because you have to reflect on things, right? And kind of see through other people's eyes and really other people's perceptions in life. You can't just walk around only looking through your own pair of eyes. It just became more clear and clear and clear that she was right. And that I really wasn't doing these leadership competency things that I needed to build on. I wasn't creating big wins for myself and proving that I was a leader. So I started raising my hand for projects. I started volunteering myself for things outside of what a normal sales agent's required role is. And I started helping my peers, really focusing the attitude on communal success versus individual success.
Yes.
And man, that mindset change was so drastic. So I stopped being number one. I was never number one again.
Mm-hmm.
Never. As a sales agent. And but changing my mindset to be leadership focused, they caught on to it. And then I started getting all these opportunities when it came to big projects, independent agent acquisition projects to team lead in sales and retention to supervisor leadership opportunities in sales, retention, customer service. They started handing me things and throwing things at me. I mean, my first opportunity, they actually came and pulled me off the phone and said, hey, we had to let somebody go. Will you step in for them? Mm-hmm. So, you build trust and people will come to you when they know that you're ready. So sometimes we don't have to kick and scream and beg and demand and feel entitled for something.
True.
Leadership will definitely know when you're ready. And a lot of times they'll come and knock on your door.
Well, what's fascinating about your story is after two straight years of being the top of the top of the top, if I was in your shoes, I would have had this perhaps the same mentality of, if I've done it for me, surely I can do it for others. And where then that perspective was challenged, which was, and what I heard from you is the challenge really was about, what are you doing? You've shown you can eat well, you could take care of you, but what are you doing to feed other people around you?
Right.
And what are you doing to serve other people around you? And really, what are you doing to embody service leadership, right? Servant leadership, where you're building up the people around you, where you potentially personally have less sales, but the value you're adding to those around you can contribute to just as much, if not multiply your value a number of times over.
True. Like that's exactly right.
Love that. Well, capturing, I think that principle was key. And I know you have a variety of experience you can speak on from a leadership perspective, from a coach perspective. We will have to have you back on to discuss more of that. Anything else that you wanted to chop it up before we wrapped up here?
You know, just that I wish the Spurs still had Kawhi Leonard. And, you know, badly.
True.
Man, but I think, you know, hopefully my Spurs fans are in agreement that San Antonio technically has 6 championships now. So.
Wow. I actually shared that principle with an avid Spurs fan, and they told me that was blasphemy.
Blasphemy, yeah.
Yes.
I cheered for Kawhi. Did you cheer for Kawhi when he came back to town?
Oh, when he came back to town?
Yeah, playing for Toronto.
Well, I mean, I wasn't at the game or anything.
You should have been.
And but I probably didn't even watch it on TV.
Wow. True fan over here.
Mm-hmm. But you're asking if I cheered for him when he came back as opposed to Boo?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay, that's where this is going.
So you a booer or you a cheer?
Here's my perspective on a lot of situations that happen in the public eye, celebrity eye, is that I believe there's so many details that I'm not aware of. So if without a number of details, and I just love knowing from, the question is from the horse's mouth versus the person of the person of the person who talked to the horse potentially. So, you know, my stern, strong stance is I'm going to focus on what I know to be true.
I agree. And that's the problem, is that the horse's mouth, which we shouldn't be calling Kawhi Leonard a horse, but
this is true.
You know, he really didn't speak. Yeah, he mm-hmm. really didn't speak. So the only facts that we have are that he won us a championship in 2014. Legend. Put his jersey in the rafters. You know, he's on the Spurs at Mount Rushmore. Can that be safely said?
Wow, okay, we're going into all this, okay.
I don't know, who's on that Mount Rushmore? There's, so 4 people going around the Mount Rushmore, right? So Tim Duncan.
David Robinson,
for sure. Those two are iced down. Oh, so, did I say iced? Iceman?
Ooh.
Is that a third? Is that safe to say? Or there's no championship, but
above Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili.
I'm asking you.
So who are you knocking off if you're putting Kawhi up?
You know what? Maybe Kawhi doesn't go on the Mount Rushmore. No, you know what? I think if it was me, I wouldn't put up Tony or Manu either.
Wow.
Yeah.
So no Kawhi.
It would be the Coyote.
Wow. Then,
no, I'm kidding. No, it would be Tim Duncan, David Robinson, George Gervin, Greg Popovich.
No, so no James Silas.
James who? No, I'm just kidding. James Silas, I met the man. He is a super nice guy. I love James Silas. Johnny Moore, love him. Controversial topic, too, is that Avery Johnson, we should take his jersey down.
Wow.
From the rafters.
Wow, okay.
Avery Johnson, we need to make room for Kawhi Leonard up there instead.
So, wait, so you're going to drop that bomb and leave? Are you going to explain that bomb? Or...
I mean, first off, Avery Johnson, how many All-Star games did Avery Johnson go to?
Oh, so you're just talking from pure accolades.
I mean, what did he accomplish? what are his accolades? I love Avery, little general. I think his biggest accomplishment was that he was
that
in the
shot.
Movie. No, he was in the movie called Eddie with Whoopi Goldberg. That may have been it. But, you know, I think that, you know, I love all my Spurs, so not trying to hate on Avery. But, you know, if he was off that team in 1999, we would have still won a championship.
Wow. What about who would have shot that shot in the corner? That,
you know, let's talk about David Robinson. Let's talk about Tim Duncan. Let's talk about Sean Elliott. Let's talk about Mario Elie.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like that.
Just take away everything from Avery, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yep. Made little general.
Okay. What else you got?
What else do I got? Spurs championship in 2020 coming. DeJounte Murray.
DeJounte coming back.
Derek White.
What about, is DeRozan a free agent?
We got DeRozan. He's still two more years.
Two more years?
LaMarcus Aldridge, and of course, everybody's favorite, Ayaka Poeltl.
There we go.
Yeah.
There we go.
So who would you trade if you're the GM?
Would you change this lineup,
or would you go with it?
We brought up James Silas earlier. I do have a James Silas story.
Oh, you do?
Uh-huh.
You met him?
Yes. I actually had his phone number at one point in time.
Okay, talk to him on the phone. Please tell.
So it was probably like 13, yeah, it was probably like 19 years old when I met him.
Okay.
And I was playing in a midnight basketball league on Friday nights that he hosts up in Austin. So on Friday nights, I drive up to Austin with a few friends, and we play in his league. So I saw him, introduced myself, and I asked him if he had any contacts with colleges. I was thinking about, you know, I had some ambition to play college basketball. And he had a contact for me in Blinn College. And so he made the connection. It wasn't something I was really, I mean, I thought I was willing to do, but then I was really thinking about my dreams and my passions and what was my primary focus. But just that he would go that far to not only, one, hosting that league was to keep kids or and keep young men off the streets. But then two, to give somebody like me who he knew from nothing, his phone number and then to even try to help me to have this opportunity at Blinn College. All of that, it was a special memory that I have of that time period.
That is a beautiful story. We need to have James Silas on to talk about this. That's pretty intense. James Silas, wow, thank you for that. You know, I'm trying to think of a story that even matches that. And all I got is that George Gervin set me up for success. And the man was gracious enough to sign my baby book when I was a newborn.
So wow.
That was my first autograph of
me. There we go. There we go.
So thank you, George. Iceman.
Thank you, George. Mm. George, you're welcome to come on too.
There you go.
Yeah.
So then, so controversy, I mean, you don't like to talk about or speculate how the Spurs should change up their roster then, huh?
It's not that I don't like to talk about it. It's more of I don't purposefully think about the how to, you know, necessarily change the roster.
I love playing GM. You got to show support to all the Spurs, but man, I don't know. You think this team right now can win a championship?
No.
The way it's set up?
No.
So no. So we have to be a little bit, you know, more vocal, especially the platform you have to, you know, kind of maybe recommend how we can shake it up.
How much do you think an actual GM pays attention to a platform like I have?
Hey, you know what? Maybe you'd be surprised. Maybe. But yeah, straight up, I would, man, I can't even say it. Yeah. I don't know. I would probably trade DeMar DeRozan. Yeah, I love the guy. But his heart's in Toronto. Straight up.
Still, even after everything?
That's what it seems like, man. Just got to meet the guy one time and asked him how he was like in San Antonio. True story. He said, it's different. That was his response. It's different. So
how did you meet him?
I met him at the Spurs facility, actually. I was invited to tour the facility, check it out. And I got to meet him and Chimezi Metu, some others. But he was pretty forthcoming with an answer. And
seems authentic to me.
Yeah, like San Antonio's Mexican food, yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah, no, it was definitely, you know, kind of sad hearing his kind of ho-hum answer and just sensing the unexcitedness in his voice. Is that a word, unexcitedness? It wasn't.
You sense his dryness.
Very dry.
Sense his discouragement.
And you're probably going to get all this out. Yeah. So just, but yeah. Now, love DeMar.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for the big red.
You know it. All right. Anything else?
putting me on the spot for all the topics.
Man. Okay. I mean, I was helped to put together the first 90% of this.
Oh, did you? Oh, well, I'm sorry you had to talk 90% of the time. Yeah.
All right. So I guess we're just going to close it out. So we'll beatbox. Are you gonna? All right.
Want to close out with the song?
Nah.
I'll totally sing.
Nah, it's okay.
Might lose some viewers, though.
There we go. So that is the Strong Life Coach podcast. We had Chris Flores on today talking about sales, talking about the transition from sales into a leadership role, what helped him get there, service leadership, raising his hand, volunteering for the project. We learned the top four reasons that he was the top salesperson in the insurance industry in a big time company. Well, in the top four, let's see if I can recall them, was number one, urgency, number two, confidence through knowledge, number three, follow-up, and number four is
endurance.
That's right. And I do like how those flow together, because you have knowledge of every call not being perfect, and that's going to help you to have that endurance, keep going, and then that's going to help you to be, like I said before, knowledge and confidence helps you to be urgent. And then follow up, understanding that I have the confidence that this can help close the deal.
Right. Beautiful. Beautifully said.
All right, my friend. Well, thanks for coming on. Look to have you on again soon. Let me know when you're free. We'll reconnect and reconvene.
Sounds good, man. Definitely stay blessed.
Yeah.